Okay, so good morning, everybody. It is Wednesday, February 16th, 8 a.m. And this is our last online lab. Woohoo! We go back to in person, not on Monday, because Monday is a holiday. We go back to in person on Wednesday. So that's when we go back and meet in lab. And what I wanted to do today, I didn't have a huge long session planned for today. Mainly what I wanted to do today was cover sort of what's going to happen when we go back into lab. And what that first day is going to look like, and give us some idea, expectations of what it is that I'm going to ask you to do. And that will make it so that when we actually go back in and do the lab lecture for that day, that I think it'll hopefully help to speed things up a little bit. And then if we want to, we can use a little bit of time after this, sort of like open office hours. I've got another meeting that was requested of me at 10 o'clock, but there should be plenty of time for all of that to be able to do sort of some extended office hours and do what I want to do. I sort of expect this to take not more than an hour in terms of what we were going to talk about this morning. Let's go ahead and let me jump into what it is that I specifically want to talk about. So let me do a screen share. OChem lab notes, new. And the first thing is that our room number and location, a lot of you have never had lab before, never even been in the 600 building before in terms of where things are located. So it'd be nice if I just pulled up a campus map and just showed you, but it's easy enough to draw in terms of the 600 building. If you're looking at Soquel, and you've got Soquel that runs along here, there's what is called Perimeter Road. And the 600 building is right at the top. And when I say at the top, it's on the ocean side of that top of the road. So you actually drive above the 600 building. And in that 600 building, it's cut between chemistry and bio. So chem is on this side. Bio's on this side. And the room number that we're in is 607. So it's on the ocean side of the 600 building right there. And there's a set of stairs that that sits here in the middle. And we're just off to the left of those stairs sitting in that location. So when we come into that room, the first thing that I'm going to ask you to do when we come in that day is we're going to open up the lockers and we're going to get lockers assigned. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pass out locker numbers and ask you to do a sign up sheet. So agenda for that day. Is we're going to number one, hand out locker combinations. I'm going to have you sign in. So there's a sign-in sheet. That way I know who is actually in each locker. Once you get the combo, the sign-in sheet gets passed around and you just put your name and I don't know if email goes on there. I think it's just the name that we asked for in terms of those locker sign-in sheets. And then what we're going to do is we're going to verify everything that's in the locker. There's a locker check-in sheet. And you're asked to go through the equipment and to look at the equipment. Now, most of the other chemistry classes, Chem 1A, Chem 1B, Chem 3, they may have some personalized equipment. Most of them don't. We used to have lockers in Chem 1A and Chem 1B. I don't think they do anymore. And so there isn't really any personalized equipment that you have. And everything that you use is communal and mostly plastic in nature in the Chem 1A and Chem 1B classes. In this class, almost everything is glass because the organics will just eat plastics. And so we have no plastic parts that I can think of, really. Everything is glass. And they're fairly expensive. And so when we hand you that locker check-in sheet, what we're asking you to do is verify that the item is present, that you have the right number of items. And the other thing that we're asking you to verify is that the items are in good condition and that they are that they can be used. So there's certain types of damage that we look for, and I'll highlight that type of damage that we're going to be looking for. So locker check-in sheet, we look at all the equipment and account for all the equipment. If anything is missing in the locker, we'll provide it to you. If you have extra items, we may try to acquire those back from you. If you have extras, we usually have a cart where you can put the extra material. And when we're looking at the glassware, we're looking for certain types of damage. And there's, I'm gonna do some handouts that have the different names of the pieces of glassware and all the different pieces of equipment that you're looking for. And it may be that I'm standing up in the front of the classroom or I'm walking around the classroom, and every time somebody has a question, I can't find this item. What is this item? I'll hold that item up so everybody can see what that item looks like. Or I may even draw them up on the board, different ways of dealing with the glassware names. But the type of damage that we're looking for are basically three different types of things. On the round bottoms, you see a type of damage that is called a star crack. They're really hard to find. When you hold it up to the light, they glint in the light, and it's that glinting that you typically see. That star crack is normally generated from a hit where the round bottom bounced on the table or clinked up against something else that was a little bit too much force for it to handle, and it damages the glassware. The problem with these is that when you heat them, and the heating and cooling that happens with these round bottoms, that the star crack can elongate and the round bottom can entirely fracture, losing its contents. And if that happens while it's over a heating apparatus, there can be a flash fire. And so these we like to get out of circulation. So any glassware that has a star crack in it like that is done. And the way that we find it is we pick it up and we hold it up to the light and we rotate it around and we try to see if we can see any sort of star cracks that are in it. So this is not usable. The other type of damage that we look for is, besides star cracks, are just general cracks. So certain pieces of glassware, these are called conical vials. And the conical vials have a thick piece of glass on their bottom, and they come down into a conical shape. They have threads at the top of them. And usually what we see here is a fissure crack that'll come through it. So this is a line crack in a thicker piece of glassware. This is also not usable. And so we want to get those two things out of circulation. The other type of damage that happens, again, mostly on this type of glassware, but it can occur on any type of glassware, is, and I'll draw this is a Claisen adapter. These guys also have threaded joints at their tops. Um, This is a round bottom flask. This is a conical vial. Sometimes called a conical reaction vial. And then this one is called a Claisen adapter. The other thing that happens here is that these guys get chips in their tops. And so what you can find is a chip that is sort of a V-shaped chip. The chips are usable, but we need to be careful with them. So we can still use glassware that has chips in it. It's just that when you put a lid on it and you invert it, something that has a chip in it like that will leak. And particularly with the conical vials, we tend to invert them frequently when we put a lid on it. And so it's a good idea to know if a conical vial or another piece of glassware happens to have a chip in it. And so that when we put a lid on the item, that we know not to invert that piece of glassware. The reason that they're still usable is because of the type of joint that's inside that glassware. Glassware joints, when we look at glassware, glassware are joined by what's called a ground glass joint. The ground glass joint has two pieces. There is, on like a round bottom, the female part has a slight taper to it and a thicker wall here that comes back in. And then this goes out to the rest of the round bottom. And then the male side has the receiving component of that. And this glassware is, like it says, ground. And it is opaque ground glass, meaning that it's not smooth. It actually has texture to it. Ground with sandpaper. And so it has little imperfections that are in this glassware. And they seal together, they union together quite solidly. And because of that, if there happens to be a chip in it, if we take this image and we say, what happens with a chip when these guys come together? If there's a chip in this piece, then when they union together, they still function and seal perfectly. And so the chips really don't matter as much, because as this piece comes and sits inside here, the seal is along these edges, and the chip that's up in the top doesn't make any difference. And so this will still seal and still work. The ground glass joints have what are called a standard taper. What we do is they use a symbol that looks like a dollar sign, but with just a single slash in it. This is made to represent the standard taper. And so the top is the T, this symbol equals ST essentially, so that the T is sitting in here in the top of the S makes the T. It stands for standard taper. And there are different standards, 1420, 1410, 1922, and 2440 are the most common. And the numbers represent the diameter. And the bottom number represents the depth. And so a 1410 is used on our glassware that we use that is all of the micro scale glassware. Actually, I'm going to do it this way. Change my writing so that 1410 used on micro scale. These are things that range from 3 milliliters on up to 25 milliliters in volume. And they're rather short joints, so that when you look at them, those conical vials that I was drawing, they're 14 millimeters across and 10 millimeters in depth. And so that standard taper sits in here and that's the 1410 joint. So 14 across and 10 deep. The 1420 glassware is really common for things that are like 10 mils on up to 100 mils. So when we get 1420, these are common on say 25 mils or 10 mils. A lot of these are 10 mils. 10 mils on up to sometimes 100. The 1922. This is the most common glassware for small lab prep. When you walk into just about any lab or any graduate school, the standard glassware that they're using is 1922. And these range in volumes from 25 milliliters on up to like 500 milliliters. And then the 2440, this is larger prep. And these run usually somewhere in the neighborhood of 500 to a couple liters. They get to be really large size glassware. And we have all these different sizes in the lab, but what you're going to find in your locker is you're going to find the 1410. The 1410 and the 1420 are oftentimes interchangeable. You can use 1410 and 1420 together, or at least you can use a 1410 male to a 1420 female. The other way around doesn't work quite as well. But all of our glassware in the lockers is the 1410. So that's a little bit about standard taper joints and the type of glassware that we use and how we describe that. So as I said, you're looking for those damaged pieces. You're looking to identify star cracks. You're looking to identify line cracks. We're looking to get those pieces of glassware out of circulation. Chips are okay, but what I'd like to do is put a piece of tape on the glassware and put chip on that piece of tape so that I know that when I'm using it, not to invert that piece of glassware accidentally when I work with it. These threads are rather interesting. The threads are a way of coupling the pieces of glassware. So when I take and I put two pieces of glassware together, they go together with these standard tapers, but the standard taper doesn't hold the glassware together. What holds the glassware together is a clamping system. That clamping system looks like this. You have, let's say that we're using an air condenser and we want to take and attach this air condenser to our conical vial. The air condenser has the standard taper joint on it that is the 1410. And the conical vial has the receiving 1410 female joint on it. And it's threaded. So what happens is there is a plastic cap that has a hole in it. These usually have vertical lines on them. They're usually black in color. And there's an O-ring. The way the system works is you take the cap and you put the cap on first. The cap is designed so that the hole in the cap will fit over the ground glass joint. But then once that cap is on, it will just fall off this ground glass joint if we don't put the O-ring in place. The O-ring is a fairly tight fitting O-ring that sits in here. And that O-ring then provides a bigger gap than the ground glass joint so that the cap can no longer fall off. So we have to have the O-ring under the cap. And then the two will hold together and union together so that as we bring them together, this piece comes in and sits, the O-ring sits there. And then I can do this in a sneaky way. This guy comes down, screws on, and that O-ring and where it's sitting locks the whole thing together. And so now they're locked together. If you forget the O-ring and you don't put the O-ring in there and you tighten down this lid, you can just lift the air condenser back off. So all of the pieces of glassware that we have in the locker, these lids are interchangeable and they can be taken off and put onto any piece of glassware that has that 1410 ground glass joint. And so they can, so normally when you open up the locker, people will look at it and they'll say, hey, I'm missing all of these lids. And I don't have all of the locking mechanisms on all my pieces of glassware. That's true. What you generally have is you have three or four lids that are in your locker, and those lids are interchangeable onto every piece. And there's usually three or four O-rings that are in there so that as you're assembling any piece of glassware, you can take lids from anything and put them on to build the apparatus that you need to build. And so don't be dismayed if pieces of glassware are missing the caps, as long as you have a certain number of caps in your locker, you're fine. And we have a drawer that has 1,000 of these caps in it within the classroom as well. And you're always welcome to go over to the drawer and get more if you happen to need more. O-rings are a little more difficult to find. I've got them in another cabinet, but you can ask me for an O-ring at any time. And if we have an O-ring that's not working or failing or broken, we can always replace it. So all of those parts, if anything is breaking or malfunctioning, I may notice it before you do as you're putting it together, in which case I'll go get your replacement right away. If you happen to notice something, you can always ask and I will always replace it. The other thing about this is that this glassware is expensive, and we don't generally talk about how much glassware costs. Usually within the chemistry classes, most faculty never talk about how much the glassware costs. I really want you guys to know, because I think it helps you to treat it with respect when you're working with the material. That's the way that I think about it. And so most of the time, whenever we use any piece of equipment, rather than not telling you because I don't want the piece of equipment stolen, I tell you because I want you to protect it. That includes not having other people come in from the outside into our classroom or walking through our classroom, so that we're all looking out for the equipment that we have, because we have a finite amount of equipment and it is all immensely expensive. So you wouldn't think that these small pieces of glassware would be that expensive, but Conical vials run about $30 a piece. So just the Conical vial itself is a $30 item. These are small 3 mil and 5 mil Conical vials, each one running $30. The air condenser is about a $15, $20 item. A water jacketed condenser can be $50, $60. So when we get to something that is a little bit more detailed in terms of what it does, and here what I would draw or show you is a water jacketed condenser. This is a piece of glassware that has some spouts on it that come off the sides. This then goes down into that ground glass joint. So it tapers a little bit. And then, as I said, there's that ground glass joint that fits down on here. And inside of this, there is a tube that runs through inside of this piece. Actually, I didn't need to erase that because I need that tube that goes in there. So this tube runs all the way through this and connects like this. And connects up here. And water is allowed to go inside of this and circulates through it. So water will go in that spout and out this spout. And this is water for cooling. And as that water fills that outer tube, it cools down this thing to prevent evaporation. And it's called a water jacketed condenser. These will run, I don't know, $50, $60 a piece. And so you start to wonder, when I break things, what happens when I break things in this lab? And the answer is that we cannot charge you when you break things. That when you break things, we just have to replace them. And that's the cost of doing business. That California Ed Code says that we can only charge you for things that you can take home. So if you go to a ceramics class and you pay for the clay and make an item, and then you get to take that item home, they can charge you for the clay because you are making an item that you can take home. But because the broken piece of glassware is unusable, it's no longer functioning, it's not something that we can charge you for. So you can work without fear. We can't charge you for any of the items, but we do want you to know how much they cost and to treat them with care, because some of them can be very expensive. And in fact, one experiment that we're going to do in relatively short order is a distillation experiment. In that experiment, we use a distillation head, and the distillation heads are hand-blown pieces of glass, all one piece of glass. We have both long stem and fractional distillation columns and short path distillation columns. These guys are all one piece of glass they look kind of similar to this in that they have a long column. And then they have, coming off of this column, the water jacketed condenser. That water jacketed condenser has spouts in and spouts out. This goes down to the ground glass joint. This piece over on the other side takes a turn. Has a little spout that comes out here. And then this goes down to a ground glass joint as well for a receiving flask to attach to. And then there's a connecting bar that connects this across, piece of glass that connects it. And this has these little dimples in it. And this is for doing distillations. This is all one piece of glassware that's hand blown. This piece, as I said, is a double column. So it's double walled column for water circulation in that piece. And this is about, I want to say $700. And we allow you guys to work with these and use these. And we show you how to clean them and how to treat them with care and to take good care of them. The balances, the pan balances in there, those are a couple of $1,000 a piece for the pan balances. So all of the equipment is extremely expensive and we need to treat all of that glassware with care. This is a distillation column. Those, the distillation columns, you don't have in your locker. We keep those someplace else because they're too fragile to have them in the lockers. All right, so we go through the lockers, we do the locker check-in, and then at the completion of the locker check-in, then what I'm going to ask you to do is a small experiment. So after locker check-in, we're going to do, we'll call it experiment one. And this is going to be calibration of pasture pipettes. The pasture pipettes that we use are glass pipettes. They have a little dimple at their near the top of the pipette, and then they're straight glass. They come in two different styles. They come in a short pipette that has a shorter end on it, and then they have these that are, that's what I'm looking for. They have these that are long. So the long ones this part extends quite long. These are not expensive and they are made out of fairly cheap glass. There are a few pennies a piece. These are disposable. We try to recycle them as much as we can, but ultimately we wind up throwing these away instead of trying to wash them. They are not borosilicate glassware. They are normal glass. Which means that they're fairly fragile. And they're also very sharp. So when we walk around with them in the lab, we always walk around with them as if they were a knife. You don't hold it up and out in front of you. You hold it down by your legs and you and you always hold the point of this thing pointing downwards so that if you happen to turn around quickly and walk into somebody, you don't stab them with this piece of glassware. This piece of glassware, if you were not careful with it, can go right through your hand. It is, it's very, very thin. It's very sharp and quite dangerous if they're not treated carefully. They're made to be used with a plastic bulb. The bulbs have a little round fold on the bottom of them. And then they go up and they're kind of orange in color. The bulb is meant to be flexible and pliable so that if you squeeze it and it snaps or pops or sticks, we need to replace it. It should just pop right open without any sort of snapping sound or sticking sound. And when they are applied to these, I'm going to have to show you in class how we actually apply them. Usually what I do is I put one edge on and hold it with my thumb and then I pull the other edge over. When they sit onto a pasteur pipette, they go onto the pipette and they just fit on the very top. They don't push all the way down onto it. So, like I said, what I typically try to do is when I put these things on, and I'll demonstrate it in class, is I bring it in at an angle and I set it right there. I apply pressure with my thumb at that edge, and then I use my other hand to pull the other edge over. And when it sits just on the very top. It doesn't go all the way down to that little dip in the glass. And I'm not exactly sure why there is that dip in the glass. I think that dip in the glass is either a manufacturing issue in the way that they make them, or they're made to be used with some other device as well that may go down to that point, but I have never seen or heard of how that could actually be used. So it's just an artifact of the pipette itself, as far as I know. Or it may be that that little dip there is to help prevent you from sucking liquid all the way up into the bulb, because we never suck liquid into the bulb. The bulb is for air only. It is not meant to hold liquid. And so the way that we use these then is we squeeze the bulb, depress the bulb, stick this into a liquid, release the bulb, and liquid is drawn up into the pipette. The pipettes have no calibration markings on them. And so what I'm going to ask you guys to do is I'm going to ask you guys to calibrate them. And the calibration experiment, the way that we do that is we use a balance and a conical vial. You can use a 3 mil or 5 mil. What you want to do is you want to tear it. You want to add 0.5 grams of water. Anybody recall what the density of water is?
Approximately 1 gram per milliliter.
It is.
And I think it's like 0.998.
It is 0.998. If we were at 4 degrees Celsius, it's 1.000, but because we're at room temperature, it's a little bit less. But if we put 0.5 grams of water in, about how much water is in the conical vial then?
500 microliters.
500 microliters, which is, yes, correct. In milliliters, how much is that?
0.500 milliliters, or yep. I guess that'd just be 0.5 milliliters.
There you go. Absolutely. So what we're doing is we're using mass rather than relying on the graduation marks that are on the conical vial. The graduation marks on the conical vials can sometimes be a little rough. So we're using mass to get a closer measurement of what a half a mil is, because the density of water, as Jonathan said, at 25 degrees Celsius is 0.998. It's pretty close to one. If we took it down to 4 degrees Celsius, it is 1.000. But this is close enough for our use and what we need to do. This is really just an approximation. Volumes are approximations. We always use mass when we want to determine the amount of material that we've added. But because we deal with a lot of liquids, we like to get an estimate of how much we're adding. And then we always go to the balance to get the mass. So we add 0.5 grams of the water into the conical vial. And then what we're going to do is we're going to pull that 0.5 milliliters into the pipette. And when we do that, I only got that part. What I want is I want all of this. And I'll demonstrate it in class so that you can actually see what it is that I'm going to do. But what we do is we take and we put this all the way down inside the conical vial. And we go down to the tip of that conical vial. And we draw the water up into the pipette. So initially, we've got water that's sitting in here that's at the 0.5 milliliter mark. We squeeze the bulb. We draw the water up into the pipette. When we release the bulb, the idea is that that water is now pulled up into here. And we raise that pipette up out of the, see, I'm going to have to get all of this like that. We raise the pipette bulb up out. And what we try to do is we try to hold it so that the water is right at the tip so that there's no air. And then what we do is we put a mark right here with a Sharpie. And then that mark constitutes the half mil mark. And then that mark, the problem with that mark being in Sharpie is that we use these pipettes in order to go in and out of solvent bottles in order to take different solvents, hexane, heptane, toluene, different things, solvents that will dissolve Sharpie. So the Sharpie mark isn't permanent. And in fact, the Sharpie mark, if left there, will contaminate whatever samples we move this pipette in and out of. So what we do is then we expel the water, place mark, expel water, and then we make the mark permanent. We use a glass vial. To make a notch in the glass at the mark. So here what we do is we take that guy, we turn it on its side, we take the pipette bulb off, we don't have the water in it anymore. We have the Sharpie mark that we want to make that's right there. And we take the pipette bulb off. that piece we don't need. And we use a glass file to make that mark permanent. Now, glass files are triangular in shape. So if you look at them, it looks kind of like this. We have a file that comes down triangularly. And then these guys come out to a tapered handle. And there's three edges. To the glass file. Usually one of those three edges is sharp. The other sometimes is dull. So sometimes you have to rotate the file to find the sharp edge. And you use your thumb. By sharp, I mean you can feel it as though it feels like a file when you run your thumb on it. And it's safe to do so. It will not cut you. But what we're looking for is we're looking for the sharpest edge. When you find the sharp edge, what we do is we take the glass file and you set your fingers next to the mark, put like a thumb or a finger next to the mark. You then put the file on that piece of glassware with an edge down and you run it up against your finger and the glass, and it will score the glass. It will not cut your finger. It will simply grind a little piece of the glass off and make a little notch in the glass. So what we're doing visually is that if we think about the glass as a wall, this is the other wall of the glass. So I'm now really looking closely at the glass. We have taken the file and we have placed the file onto the glassware. And we pull the file backwards. And what that does is it creates just a little notch in the glass. And that's all we're looking for. We're not trying to make a super deep notch. We're not trying to make that notch go all the way around. Basically, when we look at it, we're going to see just a little file mark on one side of the glass, and that's it. And again, I'll show you how to do it in the classroom. But then that mark becomes something that we can visually see and use, and is then a calibration mark, a 0.5 mil calibration mark on the pipette. And so the goal of what I want you to do is, after we make that mark permanent, I want you to repeat that process with 1 mil of water. So I don't know, what are we on, step 6? Repeat process. With 1.0 grams, which is a 1.0 milliliter. And do this for both long and short stem. So that at the end, what we have is we have two master pieces of glassware. We call them master copies. These master copies will have a notch that will be there and there, and this one will be just a little bit higher and a little bit higher there because of the shorter stem. And these two notches are the 1.0 mil mark and here the 0.5 mark. And these now are master copies. And then what we do is we take those marks and we transfer those marks onto 5 other pipettes. Usually what we do is we put a piece of tape on these that say master, and then we use these throughout the semester to make more of these as we need them. So we never burn or use our master copies. We always use the master copy to align up against an unmarked pipette and to transfer the mark onto the unmarked pipette. Rather than going back and recalibrating all over again, we take this glassware this glassware gets laid on its side, we take another one that is not marked, we put it and line it up with it, we set the file on this, and we pull that file across it, and we transfer the mark from the master onto the copy. And yes, it's not perfect because it wasn't actually calibrated with water, but it's close enough if we understand that our volume transfers are always approximations, and that when we do stoichiometry, we never work from volume, we always work from mass. So the process is always to use volume as an approximation to transfer a liquid, but then to obtain the mass of the liquid so that we know exactly how many moles of that liquid or millimoles of that liquid we've used. So volume is always an estimate just for transfer. And so these calibration marks don't have to be perfect, they just have to be reasonable. They just have to be reasonably close. That's all we're trying to do with these. All right. And then after you do that and you make 7, 8, make 5 copies of each. Then what I have you do is I have you practice a little skill set. And that practice is to be able to suck up a liquid and be able to hold it in place. And the only thing that I have not described here is how I prefer you guys to actually hold and use these pipettes. And that's something that I'm gonna have to visually show you in class. It's a technique of holding it and using it where your thumb and forefinger work the bowl, and then you get 3 fingers around the pipette to hold it stable. And I'm not going to attempt to draw that part. That's something that I'm just going to show you in class and show you how to do and how we hold it. And there's a way that when you hold it and use it is extremely stable so that you're not flicking drops everywhere. And then the only thing I like you to practice is to practice playing with the bulb to be able to suck liquid up and to control that liquid so that the liquid doesn't just rip up into this thing, so that the liquid can be placed at different levels in here by squeezing the bulb a little bit more or a little bit less, and just learning to feel that and how to use that as a transfer technique. That's what we're going to work with. And I may show you a couple other things, what we call close transfers and other things with pipette bulbs on that day where I'm demonstrating. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I need to tell you here in terms of what it is that I'm going to want you to do. I think that's about it for the first day. The second day we come back into the lab the following Monday, we'll have a full lab lecture and we'll start an experiment that's called solubility, and that's experiment 2, solubility. So I think there's something else that was in my mind to tell you here. What do you need to bring with you? You should have your lab notebook. If you want to bring Pavia, you can bring it, but it's a big book to bring all the time. So you can go through and read experiment 1. Experiment 1 uses hexane in water, and they have you calibrating hexane. I usually ditch the hexane part just for the first day. There's no reason to have us working with hexane. We can do everything that we need to do calibration with water. We don't need to use hexane to do any sort of calibrations. So we're doing experiment 1. This is the calibration experiment. We will leave out the hexane part. We're going to work with just water. So you can bring Pavia, or you can write it down in the laboratory notebook. You should have your laboratory glasses. Looks like Google. Goggles. There we go. Lab goggles. These you can get in the bookstore if you don't have them. If you want your lab coat, I believe they have lab coats in the bookstore as well. And that's pretty much all you'll need. You need the goggles, lab coat if you want it, your laboratory notebook. So these are the only two really important things that you bring. Clarissa.
Oh, I wanted to ask, on what page is the calibration experiment? Because I have my textbook with me, like the hardcover, and I just want to see which page it's on.
Yeah, it's experiment one. And experiment one starts on page 2 of the textbook.
And then you mentioned how the lab coats are optional, right? Just for it's more for safety measures if we wanted to just wear one.
That's right. Okay, so in that experiment one, two, the other thing that I said to leave out the hexane, we're also not going to use the different calibration methods, so that they have in that textbook, as I was looking through it, it just reminded me that they have two different types of devices. They have a device that is an automated pipette. These automated pipettes are the type that they frequently use in biology. They have a hand grip. And usually a dial that's on them. They come down and they take a special type of pipette, a plastic pipette that goes into them. And you usually use a vertical wheel dial that's here to dial in a volume number. And what you do is you depress this lever, and when you let the lever up, it draws up exactly the amount that's shown in here. This is called an auto pipette. Many organic chemistry labs will try to use the auto pipettes, but the auto pipettes are really designed to be used with water. They're not meant to be used with organic solvents, and the organic solvents eat the seals inside them and they lose their calibration and they become very inaccurate. And so we don't use these, and we leave out the auto pipette. The other type of pipette that they use, or the other type of metering device that they use for volumes, goes onto a bottle, a reagent bottle. And these type have a long stem that goes down into the bottle. And they have a lid that fits on this. And on the lid, they have something very similar. They have a sort of wider component here that has a dial. And they have a volume setting that is on this. This also has a pump handle on it. And then it has a long piece that comes out and turns, and usually a little clear plastic window that you can see into it. And then this has essentially like a long straw that goes all the way down to the bottom. And these are for dispensing volumes as well, because you can set the volume here that you want to dispense. And you push the plunger down. And as you push that plunger down, it sucks up and dispenses that amount of liquid as you push the plunger down. This is what we call a pump bottle. And it has the same problems with the autopipette. They're good for aqueous, but they're not good for organics. So here's the thing about these. They're both in that experiment one, and they tell you that you're going to use them in experiment one, and they want you to measure the density of water, and they want you to measure the density of hexane using an autopipette, using a pump bottle, and then doing it by mass and gravimetrically. And they want you to do these densities, all three, and they want you to compare them. The reason that they want you to do that is because in most organic classes, they use autopipettes or they use pump bottles to make it easier for students to transfer liquids. They make it painless so that a student just walks up, pushes a pump bottle down, dispenses a liquid and walks away, and then goes to the balance and gets it. What that does is it makes it really fast. But number two, it teaches you nothing other than how to push down a pump bottle. I prefer not to use these types of pieces of equipment, because when you work in an actual lab, you never use these types of pieces of equipment. When you work in an actual organic lab, you will never use an autopipette. You will never use a pump bottle. You will do everything transferring them using volumetric pieces of glassware and using calibrated pipettes and using the tools that we're going to use in the class. And I'm going to teach you to work in a lab as if you didn't have all this type of equipment that, frankly, is inaccurate anyway when it's used in an organic setting. And so these parts, I don't have you do. We skip these parts of the lab and we just move right to the calibration part of calibrating the 5 mil pipettes. So when you look in that experiment one and you're transferring experiment one into your lab notebook, you're really just looking at the calibration part. And so I'm looking to see where that calibration part is. It starts at exercise two, pipette calibration. And so we're only doing exercise two, pipette calibration. So when I said here, experiment in Pavia, bring or transfer instructions into the notebook, leave out hexane, just part two. Calibration. That's all we're doing. None of the rest of it. Okay. I think that's about it. I think that's everything that I can give you right now, other than actually being in class and demonstrating and showing you. I mean, some of the things that I'm going to have to show you, like I said, how to hold them, how to use the glass file, the appropriate amount of force to use with the glass file, all those types of things are going to have to be things that we're going to be in person and I'm going to have to show you how to do. Other than that, I've pretty much given you everything else that we need to get you going. You guys have any questions beyond what I've presented? All right. I think that's going to be good for today. I can't think of anything else that we really need to do other than it's 9:07. If you want to stay on the line and you want to work for a little bit, treat it as office hours, do a little bit more resonance, look at some different problems. I am more than happy to stay on the line for another hour and work with you until that 10 o'clock time when I've got that next meeting coming up. I'm happy to spend some time going over those things. And if not, then I'll see you tomorrow for lecture. I think that's everything that I've got. All right. Clarissa, you got a question?
Yeah, I had another quick question. Because I think you did mention about quizzes when it comes to labs. They'll be like short quizzes, right?
They'll
be
like, yeah, you know, I was going to have some short quizzes on that material that we were doing earlier. And I was so caught up in the lecture and in the other class that I'm teaching that I just didn't get a chance to sit down and write quizzes because I've never had quizzes for those things. And so it was just a matter of sitting down and writing a bunch of things, and I haven't done it. And frankly, I don't know if I'm going to do it. I think we might just hold it over and just have it be based on the lab stuff that we're doing in person.
Oh, okay. That's really good to know. Okay. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, chalk it up to me slacking and not getting it done. Anything else you guys want to do? I got a sense that Brianna, David, and Sophia, that you guys are waiting to see if anybody is going to ask any questions and that you're just going to like tag along, but that you don't have any questions yourselves. All right, I'm going to go ahead and end the, not the session, I'm going to end the recording, and we'll see if that helps in any questions. All right, take care, you guys. All right, there. Recording is done. Do we have any questions that aren't going on the recording? No? All right. Okay, well then I'll be back online for office hours. I think office hours are at, what are they? 1 to 2 today? Let's make sure I know what my office hours are today. Wednesday, 12:30 to 1:30. So I'll be back online for office hours. And if you come up with any questions, jump back in. Otherwise, I'll talk to you guys later.